Back together again, you and I chatting it up midweek Wednesday style, May the 7th, 2025, right here on Connecticut Today. We featured our regular update with Hearst Connecticut Media senior columnist and editor Dan Haar with some fresh information on a possible capital gains tax surcharge for some upper-income state residents. Sacred Heart University Center for Catholic Studies Director Dr. Michelle Loris talked about the start of the conclave in Rome to select the next Pope of the Catholic Church. I also opened the show wondering aloud if state and national Democrats intend anytime soon to get their heads out of the sand regarding the enduring appeal to a lot of the country of President Trump. And finally, we welcomed Paul Rice, author of Every Purchase Matters, How Fair Trade Farmers, Companies, and Customers Are Changing the World. Here's a guy who's got his eye on some big stories this afternoon. Dan Haar, Hearst Connecticut Media, senior editor and a columnist. Dan, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Good afternoon. Great to be here.
And tell us the details you have there of this, because this piqued my interest. This surcharge on capital gains, is this the 1.75% thing that was floated a few weeks ago?
Well, it's more than floated. It's in law. It's not in law. It's in the package from the Finance Committee. So mm-hmm. it is the official policy position that's on the table from Democrats in the House and Senate. So that proposal is very much at the table. But what happened this morning, which caught my interest, is in an offhand way, quietly, Speaker of the House, Matt Ritter.
Yeah.
I'm off by 25 years.
Yeah.
The Speaker of the House just sort of casually said to somebody, well, we have the 76 votes we need for that. He said this, and I'm not quoting exactly, I'm paraphrasing. He said, we do not have the 101 votes, meaning for an override.
Yeah.
And then he said, the governor is going to have to make a decision. And that is, in legislative speak, that is a shot across the bow that is saying, we're going to put this on Lamont's desk, right? Now, remember, the capital gains tax surcharge has come up almost every year at the hands of Senator Looney, who favors it very strongly. He most certainly has the votes in the Senate, without question, because that's his pet policy. It has never cleared out of the Finance Committee, at least since COVID, that I'm aware of, right? I know, and it's, somebody might correct me on a year, but I don't think it has. And so here it not only has cleared out of the Finance Committee, but they're talking about not letting it die in negotiations and really, you know, potentially jamming this down Lamont's throat. And the governor is on record saying that's a bad idea and he doesn't want to see it.
Yeah, wow. And the fact that they may just put it in and dare him. Interesting stuff, Dan Haar. Interesting. Yeah. You wrote a piece on the UConn Health Center. We've talked about UConn Health before. Great work there. The doctors, the researchers, they're wonderful. But money is another aspect with UConn Health. So what's the latest on that?
UConn Health as a whole institution, including the medical school, the dental school, the research, most of which is tied to the medical school, and, of course, John Dempsey Hospital, 234, now rising to 254 beds, is, as a whole, it requires a state subsidy. And that is as should be with the medical school. Medical schools don't pay for themselves. They're part of, you know, that they might, but this one doesn't.
Yeah.
But the hospital should pay for itself, and that's the opinion of the new chairman of the board, who I wrote about, John Driscoll. John Driscoll is a veteran executive of healthcare companies. He worked for Walgreens. He sold a company, CareCentrics, based in Hartford, to Walgreens for $1 billion. So he's been at the top level of healthcare from both the sort of insurance side, the provider side. And he's now the chairman of the board of UConn Health. I didn't even know UConn Health had a board, but they do. And his goal is to shore up the finances. He makes a very clear point that under Andrew Aguanobi, the CEO, UConn Health is doing great by patients, great by safety, great for outcomes. No problem there.
Yeah.
They are expanding the facility here and there, but they need to do more financially.
Mm.
And one possible way to do that is by buying another hospital, possibly joining in a partnership with another hospital. And that's pretty dramatic stuff in a state that has questioned the need to even have a state general hospital.
Yeah.
In many recent years.
Yeah, and the one thing you do hear, Dan, and you've said that over and over again, is it's basically a money thing. Nobody I've ever heard, especially people I know who've had parents and elderly folks at John Dempsey and UConn Health, has ever questioned the care. That's not the issue. Dan Haar, Hearst Connecticut Media, a couple more minutes with him. Dan, I guess Chris Murphy will not be buying the Trump coins? What? Explain that to us, please.
Well, he's doing everything he can to save the nation, and part of it is he wants to have a bill that prevents, it would be a targeted bill, but how it's worded, I don't know exactly, but it would prevent, you know, people like sitting presidents from being able to sell commodities like mm-hmm. this. This is, in the opinion of Chris Murphy, this is Chris Murphy's latest opinion of the most outrageous form of corruption. And there's no question that it's corruption. I mean, on January 17th, 3 days before the inauguration, the president rolls out this coin, yeah. And he has this isn't subtle. The top 220 buyers of the coin are going to have access to him at a big, you know, party.
Yeah.
And so he essentially is personally enriching himself. Not essentially. He is personally enriching himself and his family with the sale of a bogus coin. Obviously, a crypto coin in and of itself has no value.
Yeah.
It only has value if its value is created. And I would argue that 99% of the value of the Trump coin is derived from access to Trump. So we, the people, should have the money that derives from that. It's an American, if he's selling access to the government, and it's our government. But Chris Murphy wants to stop that. And obviously it's symbolic. He's not going to get that through either house of Congress.
Sure.
But it's just sponsoring legislation mm-hmm. is a language that legislators use to make a statement. And his statement is, this is the single most corrupt thing the president is doing.
And it'll get him in the news cycle, too. So kudos to Senator Murphy on that. And finally, and I've been talking about this on and off throughout the day, Dan Haar, this real ID. But for some folks, and I did read the piece earlier today, various pieces on this, some folks, even if they have all the documentation or they don't, or may have trouble getting a real ID through the DMV here.
Yeah, the problem is that if you're in the gray area, a DACA recipient, for example, or TPS, temporary protective status, I think people don't realize that many immigrants, millions of immigrants, are in a gray area. They're not fully recognized with the rights that we have to work and drive and own business, all the stuff that we have the rights to and vote, certainly.
Mm-hmm.
But they are also not here as illegal immigrants. Many of these people, Trump and his administration, are trying to deport. But while we're having that debate, today is the day, happy May 7th, when you need a real ID in order to travel on a plane. And Connecticut, unlike other states, does not have a temporary license. That's the problem. And the commissioner spoke about that. We don't have a license that you can give to somebody who doesn't have that sort of full status.
Yeah.
So the good news is that a passport works, and any number of other documents do work. But you can imagine that an airport, if somebody doesn't, some refugees don't have a passport.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so it's a problem, but it's a problem with a fix. And I'm hopeful, I guess, Tony Guerrero, the commissioner, is hopeful that the legislature might do something about it. I'm amazed that it took this long to figure out.
Yeah, I mean... Didn't this pop into anybody's rhetorical question, Dan? Didn't that pop into anybody's head a few months ago or a couple of years ago, or did we just miss it?
I don't know. I think I was in fifth grade when this, you know, higher level ID idea
20
came
years
about.
Ago.
And more than I was in fifth grade, a little bit more than 20 years ago.
All right. Dan Haar, Hearst Connecticut Media. Dan, drive safely. We'll talk next week, sir. Thank you.
Have a great week.
You too, Dan. As we told you earlier right here on Connecticut Today, we have seen our first puffs of smoke from the Sistine Chapel at the Vatican. They were black, and apparently because of the hour there, I don't think there'll be another vote today. So vote one to elect a new Bishop of Rome, as he's known, a Pope of the Catholic Church, now in the books. They will move on to how many more ballots, we don't know. Joining us right now to chat about this, she joined us a few days ago to set up the whole scenario here, Dr. Michelle Loris, who was the director of the Center for Catholic Studies at Sacred Heart University in Fairfield. Go Pios. Dr. Loris, hi, it's Paul again. Good afternoon. How are you?
Hi, Paul. Good. How are you?
Good, good. Well, are you surprised that the first vote didn't elect anyone? I don't think anybody thought we would get somebody in round one, are we?
No, no, I wasn't surprised. That's usually an opportunity for the Cardinals to sort of settle in and see what names are coming up. I don't think it necessarily will change who, you know, some of those front runners might still be. They won't vote again until tomorrow. They won't go to, you know, and then, you know, there's 6 hours difference, six or 7 hours difference.
Yeah, I think it's six. Right? Yeah, I think it's six. Yeah, yeah.
Right. So what is it? It's about 9:30 there. They are now sequestered in Santa Marta House, right?
Yeah.
Where they probably had their evening meal.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, they have very light meals. They have pasta or rice, maybe fish or chicken, a vegetable.
Mm-hmm.
They might have a little bit of wine, definitely no hard liquor. Well, you know, for the Cardinals, that might be.
Well, listen, you know, it's the 133 guys here, Dr. Loris, running a church of 1.4 million. No, I get it. I understand
billion,
it.
Billion.
I'm sorry. 1.4 billion worldwide. So they're probably saying, okay, so-and-so got so many votes. So-and-so got so many votes. This cardinal didn't do as well as we thought. Wow, he did much better.
Right.
So now the deal-making begins, right? Is that what you would say?
No. The deal making has really, I wouldn't call it deal making, but that whole week that preceded this, they've had, I would say that we can say two big things have been going on.
Yeah.
So in the whole past week, there's been the mourning for the dead Pope,
sure.
Right, for Francis.
Yeah.
But there have been what are called general congregations, and so the cardinals have been listening to essentially lectures. Cardinals will get up, and they've been taught, and the cardinal will talk about the issues or concerns that they think are most important in the church. So a cardinal might get up and talk about synodality. Another cardinal might get up and talk about the importance of staying close to the doctrine of the church. Another cardinal might get up and talk about the importance of liturgy. And so they've been listening to actually these lectures, essentially. The other thing that's been happening, though, is that in this past week, this is really where a lot of the conversations take place, at lunch, at dinner, in the cafes, if you will. And so alliances and groups will form. And they're talking to each other about candidates. And so, you know, you have some of the ones who are strong influencers. So, for example, Cardinal Stupich from Chicago, who's here at Sacred Heart University and gave a Bergoglio lecture. And is a very strong advocate of Pope Francis and of synodality. And but he's a... someone who, you know, would have strong influence. He himself is not in any of the front numbers. But he would be someone who would have been talking to the other cardinals. And as would, you know, on a more conservative side, one of the things that we know has occurred is that a lot of the philanthropic conservative organizations like NAPA have descended upon Rome for the Jubilee and have had, you know, dinners, et cetera. And in some instances have invited a cardinal or something.
Oh,
well, there's influence.
Sure.
You know, there may be influence there, but mainly I think it'd be in those informal lunches and dinners where they would be speaking with each other.
Dr. Michelle Loris is the guest. She is the Center for Catholic Studies Director at Sacred Heart University. Dr. Loris, please continue, but I was going to ask you, so I guess some of the front runners here, we're hearing about a cardinal from Africa, also a gentleman from the Philippines we're hearing. So some of these names have been bubbling up, right?
Yeah, so I think the name that comes forward as number one, although it's hard to know, you know, I want to just say it's a very open field, despite the fact that there's been black smoke. But one of the names that comes up is Cardinal Parolin. He's was the Secretary of State under Francis, very much a diplomat. He would be a kind of a compromise candidate, and he has Francis's vision, but not at all Francis's charisma, and probably a more cautious, careful individual. And so he might be seen as someone who would just, you know, keep the ship steady, and, you know, he's very much competent with the bureaucracy.
Mm-hmm.
What he doesn't have is pastoral experience. And, of course, Francis, you know, being a pastor and pastoral experience with a centerpiece of Francis's papacy.
And, you know, Dr. Loris, that's interesting. And I want to end on this, if we could. You know, there is the pastoral aspect on this. There is the administering of the church and the sacraments. But the Vatican is a big bureaucracy, is it not, with millions of dollars running through it? And you mentioned, I think, administrator or administration there.
Right.
I think people lose sight of that, don't they, sometimes?
Yeah, I think that they do. It is huge. You know, as you said before, 1.4 billion people globally, right? You know, it's not just, you know, so, and all kinds of countries, cultures, ethnicities, languages, mores, customs, all different ways of, you know, people who live, you know, far out in the Amazon, people who live in Africa, Asia, the United States. And so the person, you know, and yes, probably millions, billions of dollars that, you know, the Vatican has to. So the administrative part is important, but we want someone who is both a moral voice for the world and someone who is a spiritual leader for the Catholic Church. And so, you know, we whether one is charismatic or not, not everybody could have the kind of personality that Francis had, but he is nonetheless, he will be nonetheless, a pastor. He is the Bishop of Rome. He is the pastor of the Roman Catholic Church. And in that regard, you know, he's a pastor.
On a much larger scale than any of the ones I've ever known. Dr. Michelle Loris, thank you. She directs the Center for Catholic Studies at Sacred Heart University. Dr. Loris, thank you. We'll chat down the road. Appreciate it.
All right, well, take care.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
There you go, Dr. Michelle Loris. So maybe it's the people who run Connecticut that are the outliers, right? Maybe it's Governor Lamont, Lieutenant Governor Bisewitz, Attorney General William Tong. What am I talking about here? Pretty simple. A little notice poll came out a few days ago from CNN. So this is not a Fox News poll. This is not a Newsmax poll. This is not a Rasmussen Reports poll. You know, again, all these polls that, you know, people say tend to be sympathetic toward Republicans or tend to be sympathetic toward the White House. And we hear over and over and over and over and over and over and over again from Governor Lamont, from Senator Murphy, from Senator Blumenthal, from Attorney General Tong, from Lieutenant Governor Susan Bisewitz, everywhere, legislative leaders, hey, this guy Trump is nuts. He's destroying America. He's destroying the world. We're all going to die, yada, yada, yada. Yet, You take a look at these new numbers in this new poll that came out a couple of days ago that got remarkably little coverage. I wonder why, but it came out late last week. And it was from CNN. And does this poll really show, in some ways, how out of touch Connecticut is? And that's my question to start this whole scenario here on this merry midweek Wednesday here, 203-333-9422-333-WICC. Who's really out of touch here? Who's really out of touch here? CNN's data chief, the guy Harry Enten, last week showed a new poll out there that said, hey, hello, if anybody's listening, the election, if it were held today, would essentially have the same results as when we got, as the results we got back on Election Day. So Harry Enten here is telling people, hey, I hate to burst your bubble here, but we're not going up in flames. He noted here, this new poll, you got to hear about this, folks, because I keep telling people, and I talk about it with people here in the station and people in my personal life, whatever. I said, hey, you need to look beyond your bubble here in the beautiful Constitution state of Connecticut here. You know, you may think Trump's crazy, and a lot of people do, and I disagree with a lot of the stuff he does. In more tactic than goals. But I think we need to stop here pumping the brakes that we here in Connecticut and we here in the, you know, uber progressive Northeast really know it all here. A new poll out from CNN and SSRS. So again, this is a CNN poll, hardly a conservative polling outfit. They went back and they asked registered voters who took part in the election, right, a couple of weeks ago, who would you side with now? If you had to do this all over again, right? Now you know what's happening. You had to do this all over again. Who would you side with? And guess who they sided with? Trump. Now, I was even a little... a little surprised at this one. So in that CNN poll, which I know a lot of people here in Connecticut wouldn't believe, oh, they didn't call me. Hey, listen, Clyde, they don't have to call you. So in that CNN poll from CNN SSRS, 45% of registered voters said they would take Mr. Trump. 43% said they would take the vice president at the time, VP Kamala Harris. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? Enten said, quote, this looks a heck of a lot like the election. And another 12% said, yeah, Trump and or Harris would about be doing the same job. So did you hear that? It's pretty funny. 45-43 Trump and 12% picked both of them together. Now, there's a deeper layer that we have to go in here now. But my question on this is this, and this leads to, when I saw these numbers, I asked myself, what is the other side? What are the anti-Trump people? Governor Lamont, Lieutenant Governor Bisewitz, especially the Attorney General William Tong. What are their ideas? I understand you can go on your merry way and be as anti-Trump as you want. God bless you. If that's what you feel, good on you. That's the American process. But what are your ideas to turn the tide here? Because you look at these numbers, and these numbers are the same. And my question to start off here at 203-333-9422 is 333-WICC. Very simple. Is there an honest effort going on in the anti-Trump people to go beyond just screaming and yelling how bad the guy is? What do you think of your policies? What are you going to do policy-wise here to change course? Because get outside of Connecticut, and it certainly looks like the numbers are about the same. Am I misreading this or not? 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Are you surprised at all? I'm not. Because, again, America will tend to side with crazy over broken. You know, and here in Connecticut, I wonder if the people who lead us, our majority in Hartford, from Governor Lamont, Lieutenant Governor Bicewicz, the Attorney General, William Tong, the Democratic leaders in the House and Senate, you know, they all keep pointing to Trump and saying, Trump, bad man, okay, fine, I understand where they're coming from on that. But do they ever stop to think that maybe they're the ones out of step here with the rest of the country? Seriously, honestly. Does everybody in the state from the governor on down to have blinders on? Maybe you don't have to love Trump, but do they understand why people voted the way they did? And again, you see this new CNN poll. It shows not a heck of a lot's changed. New CNN poll, 45% of registered voters who took part in the election indicated that Donald Trump is still doing a better job in the Oval Office than Kamala Harris would have. Doesn't sound like all these doom and gloom polls everybody's talking about here. 45% Trump, 43% Kamala Harris. 12% of the 2024 election voters answered that both Trump and Harris would be doing about the same job. 203-333-9422-333-WICC. On ABC News, Washington Post survey recently, 40% said they trusted Trump to deal with the country's main problems versus just 32% for Democrats. N10 said, quote, folks, this is the same picture. It's the exact same picture. And listen to this. He said the bottom line is, quote, when you look at Trump in a vacuum, it's one thing, but when you match him up against folks in the real world, all of a sudden, his numbers look considerably better. And look, I understand you can be on the right or left or either cheer or poo-poo that, but a lot of people have blinders on here. And what is the Democratic Party from Ned Lamont who keeps verbally crapping on ICE and any enforcement in this state? Does he understand how out of touch we in Connecticut sound compared to a lot of the rest of the country? Does he understand how his party is in the absolute crapper when it comes to public affairs? It's mind-boggling. Look, I'm not saying you've got to love Trump, but what are you doing? In fact, N10, the a survey guy for CNN says, quote, these numbers should be a major wake-up call for Democrats, unquote. Yes, they should be. But instead, you get Jasmine Crockett out there. You get the old Bernie Sanders out there. You get AOC saying rich people bad, rich people bad, rich people bad. And still Trump has about the same support he had when he was elected. They don't get it. Why is this so hard? Can someone explain this to me? 203-333-9422. And now you've got more Democrats. Pete Buttigieg, Transportation Secretary, saying, hey, we got to shift gears here. Chris Murphy's been saying it. And guess what? There's no gear shifting going on. Because they can, because they're paralyzed. Chris and Trumbull leads us off today. Chris, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Good, Paul. How are you?
I'm good, Chris. What's up?
Well, to the 2 points. The survey that CNN took, there wasn't a lot that people knew about Harris to give them the impetus to vote for her. And secondly, the Democrats still haven't come up with a leader that they can all fall behind.
Well, what are they waiting for? What are they waiting for?
They're waiting for God to come and strike somebody. But once they do get a leader,
yeah,
maybe they can then formulate a plan behind the leader.
Yeah.
Other than that, you're just going to get the same old,
yeah,
from our leaders in Hartford, and you just kind of take a blind ear to it.
Yeah, I mean, and Chris, you're breaking up, but thank you. I appreciate it. And that's my point. That's my ball. They got to shift gears here. And, yeah, you have all the learned people of the party saying, well, we got to shift gears here. And then you still got AOC. You still got Bernie going out there. God bless Bernie Sanders. I mean, for 80-something years old, he still sounds relatively cogent. I give the guy credit. He ends up on the Sunday shows. But, my God, after a while, Bernie, enough with the oligarchs. And we got to do this over here. Oh, my. Well, you see Bernie Sanders. Oh, he drew 30,000 people the other day. So what? So what? It's the same tired rhetoric over and over again. And if Trump was some sort of nefarious ogre outside of Connecticut, you would have thought that his poll numbers would have cratered by now. Cratered. And they don't. And they don't. And you've got the stat people from all these networks saying, hey, this is not good. Now, I know people like our last caller are going to say, well, you know, they still haven't picked their leader yet. Okay, fine. But still, as this guy at CNN said, you know, these... America, what did I say, folks? America is picking crazy over broken. And I hear the stuff coming out of the governor's office. I hear the stuff coming out of the General Assembly. And ask these people, do you have any clue? Honestly. Do you have any freaking clue as to why you lost? And again, with all due respect to our previous caller, you know, the notion that they really didn't know Kamala Harris and this or the other. Yeah, well, whose fault is that? Can I ask? Whose fault is that? And again, this is not some sort of robust a support of Trump here. It's not. In fact, in my mind, and you know, I have another article I have to get to here. This is from the Transportation Secretary, Pete Buttigieg, and yes, it's on a national scale, but it would radiate down here to Connecticut. Buttigieg says, listen, the Dems got to shift gears here, because clearly, just because you don't like Trump, it doesn't mean America loves us, meaning Democrats. What are your thoughts on this? 203-333-9422, 333-WICC, talk or text. Does the Democratic Party get it? I understand they hate Trump. That's not the issue here. Do they understand why they lost? Do they get it? Or do they see it and just, you know, not want to change? Farmers, a lot of us know farmers. There are a lot of farms, surprisingly, a lot of farms here in Connecticut. And we hear about farmers getting caught up in the trade wars right now and the tariffs. It's all confusing to me. Hopefully this gentleman can explain it and also explain a unique theory here that, again, my limited mentality can't wrap my arms around. Fair Trade Farmers. Now, the name of the book here is Every Purchase Matters, How Fair Trade Farmers, Companies, and Consumers Are Changing the World. What is a fair trade farm? Do we have any of them here in Connecticut? The author is the founder of Fair Trade USA, pioneering figure in the conscious capitalism movement, named Ethical Corporation's 2019 Business Leader of the Year and the Social Capitalist of the Year by Fast Company magazine. Paul Rice joins us. Hey, Paul. It's Paul here in Connecticut. How are you, sir?
Hi, Paul. I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm good, my friend. So explain to my listeners here, what is the theory of fair trade farmers? Because my knowledge of all this, you could fit on the head of a pin. So explain this to me.
Well, of course. You know, I reckon a lot of our listeners have seen the fair trade certified label
mm-hmm.
at the grocery store on their coffee or their bananas, their chocolate. You might have seen it at Patagonia on clothing or J.Crew.
Yeah.
The Fairtrade Certified label has been around for about 26 years here in the U.S. And what it means is that those farms or factories, because we also certify factories, they have met a rigorous standard for social, labor, and environmental practices, right? So they're not screwing their workers. They're paying a decent wage. They're taking, they're providing all the benefits and worker safety measures. Mm-hmm. They're also not polluting the environment. When farms and factories meet that standard, they undergo an annual audit. And if they pass the audit, then they get fair trade certified for a year. And that allows them to put the fair trade certified label on their products. And the retailers that we work with, yeah, and, you know, we're working now with over 2,000 companies from Whole Foods and Costco to Walmart and Kroger and Safeway and, you know, all the major retailers, Target, they agree to pay a small premium back to that farmer. And that's what allows the farmers to invest in their workforce, to invest in their farms, to make improvements in healthcare and education and housing and things like that. So, you know, long story short, fair trade certified is a way for you and I as consumers to support farmers and their families, not just here in the U.S., but all around the world.
What does it say, Paul Rice, that you have to put your imprimatur and give the fair trade certification on something that to me sounds like common sense? But yet you say your organization says, well, we do this and that. And I'm sitting here thinking, well, geez, if I ran a farm, I would do that too. But I guess there are some companies, some corporations, other farms that don't really, what, operate the way you think they should. Talk about that.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you know, honestly, Paul, business as usual in global supply chains is often highly exploitative. In the past, exploitative practices and extractive practices where, you know, natural resources were used and not stewarded in a sustainable way. That was very much the norm.
Yeah.
I think we're seeing an evolution, and I write about this in my book, Every Purchase Matters. We are definitely seeing an evolution of the mentality of business leaders here in the U.S. and all around the world. I think business leaders are overcoming this trade-off mentality where they thought, well, either I can be sustainable or I can maximize profits, but I can't do both. And I think that mentality now is giving way to a realization on the part of business leaders all around the world that you can do good and be successful as a business as well, right? That business can be a force for good in the world.
So is the hope here, if I had, say, Pacelli Farm and I wanted to get the fair trade certification here, is Paul Rice, is my hope as a businessman saying, hey, if I get this certification, it's almost like if I see free range chicken somewhere, like, yeah, I might lean to that because I think it's a better product and the animals are treated a certain way. Is that how you sell this whole thing?
That's exactly right. Yeah, that's a great analogy, Paul. We are very much like you know, cage-free or free-range chickens or organics or non-GMO. In the climate change arena, there's something called Forest Stewardship Council certification. That means that, you know, forests weren't clear-cut. All of these certifications are essentially validating to consumers that companies are actually walking the talk, that they're actually performing at a more sustainable level, and that you don't have to take the company's word for it because there's an independent third-party audit of that claim. We've seen our business grow dramatically. Fair trade produce last year, for example, grew by 25%. By comparison, the overall produce market grew by 2%.
Wow.
So what we're seeing is companies increasingly embracing what you might call ethical sourcing or responsible sourcing, and fair trade is a great example of that. Companies are embracing it, and consumers are asking for it, especially younger consumers. There's a very high level of expectation among Gen Z and millennial consumers that companies are not going to, you know, destroy the planet, that they're going to deliver products in a responsible way. So we see that as kind of the rising tide that's shifting the business community in the sustainability direction.
And, you know, finally, Paul, if there are people listening to me now who are farmers, and yeah, Connecticut has, we have our share of farmland here. They're not huge farms, but they're big enough. And they say, well, hey, this sounds interesting. How do I get that fair trade farmers designation here? I'd like to participate. How does that work with maybe a farmer who's listening to us right now?
Well, check out Fair Trade Certified. www.ccpa.org, the certification organization, which I founded in 1998, mm-hmm. which has been around for 26 years, it's a nonprofit, and we are committed to the success of farmers and workers around the world and to the protection of the environment. So anyone who's interested, check out fairtradecertified.org, and, you know, we can get you set up. Now, you know, you may not realize this, Paul, but most of the 1 million farmers that we're currently working with around the world are not in the U.S. The U.S. is relatively new to our program. We started in Africa and Asia, Latin America, working with really poor farmers who yeah. needed that fair trade certification in order to tap into the market and be able to form partnerships with companies like Costco and Whole Foods and Walmart and so on. So it's only relatively recently in the last 8 years that we've started certifying farms in the U.S. You probably heard of Driscoll's Berries. We're working with Driscoll's. Mm-hmm. We're working with Wholesome, a great tomato brand, mm-hmm. And Nature Sweet and others. And we're really excited about working with U.S. farmers as well as farmers around the world who need that direct, transparent market relationship with retailers in order to get a fair price for all their hard work.
Yeah, believe me, it's rough work. Again, the website, fairtradecertified.org, Paul Rice. Hey, Paul, finally, how difficult has, and I don't need you to name names, but you talked about working with some of the major retailers mm-hmm. here. I would imagine, and you tell me if I'm wrong here, if some of them were easier than others, and then the other ones you had to get through the knucklehead level to actually get things going here. What was that like? How's that been?
You know, companies have come to us out of enlightened self-interest. We haven't had to work hard to get, you know, the different companies to sign up. It typically, you know, typically what happens is a more visionary and sustainability focused company will sign up first in any given industry, whether okay. it's coffee or tea or produce or apparel. And then others see their success and quickly get on board. And so, you know, in apparel, we started with Patagonia.
Yeah.
And now we're working with Gap, and we're working with J. Crew, yeah. and we're working with Target. We certify blue jeans for Target. And so you see how this competitive dynamic in the sustainability field pulls companies along. And that's why we're seeing the rapid mainstreaming of fair trade and things like it. I mean, we're working with Walmart now on fair trade tomatoes.
Nice.
They're the largest seller of fair trade tomatoes in the world. And, you know, I think many of our listeners might think, well, wait, sustainability, Walmart? Like, I didn't know people like that shopped at Walmart. Well, turns out they do.
I know what you mean,
turns
Paul.
Out they do.
Yeah. Paul Rice, good luck. The name of the book, Every Purchase Matters, How Fair Trade Farmers, Companies, and Consumers Are Changing the World. Check it out, fairtradecertified.org. Paul, take care, my friend. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Paul. Have a wonderful afternoon.
Appreciate it. There you go. Freetradecertified.org. How about that? How about that?